Oh, the fillet probe?
Yeah, that sounds... I don't think that's how you say it, because that sounds like something else.
Probably fillet, if I had to guess.
I don't think we need to talk about probes on here.
Fillet and probe, just... So it's fillet?
Yes, last night I had this dream.
Tom's whacking his all forehead. Over
again. You know where you can stick
your
probe.
Talk about dreams here.
All right, so Jeff's going to cover stamp collecting
Very
history.
Very funny.
Can you do it like you're from Europe?
This week's stamp collecting in history is not about old history, but rather something historic that just took place.
Oh, no. You did that too good.
Ask and you shall receive.
Yeah. All right. Have any of you guys ever had a pen pal before?
I did when I was like 10.
I was going to bring up the fact that almost everybody has gotten a chain letter.
Ah.
Close.
That is your generation kind of dealio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've never had a chain letter, but chain emails all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that was like all the rage in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, not so much anymore. I can't even remember the last time I got one of those.
Because everyone has spam filters now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just automatic. The word chain is just instantly filtered out of everybody's email.
Okay. Anybody puts bad luck in my email, it goes right to the trash.
Oh, yeah, this is true. I don't want to know about it.
All right, so just thinking about that while we're heading in that direction. All right, ready to start?
Count it down. Okay.
Now, one more time when Blast I actually off. Hit the
going
record button.
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill
you.
Jeff.
Know, I've listened to episodes of... podcasts where they go, okay, we're starting again because we've been talking for 20 minutes and realized we forgot to hit the record button. Thanks, Engineer Jeff.
Mine was only about 30 seconds, so relax.
Yeah. Okay, so counting it down.
I'm going to kill Jeff in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Welcome to podcast number 12. We are Stamp Show here today. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Tom, Brian, and Jeff. And I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on Stitcher and iTunes. So let's talk about stamps. All right, this week we'll be talking about Stamp News Christmas, Stamps in History, The Comet, Updates, Hashtag Stamp Stories, Pen Pals, and our expert topic this week will be topical stamp collecting. So in stamp news, the U.S. Postal Service is going ahead with the tradition of issuing a Holiday Forever stamp this year by releasing a Christmas Magi stamp on November 19. The stamp will be issued in a double-sided pane of 20 as a convertible booklet format. Louis Giuliano of the Postal Service Board of Governors will dedicate the stamp at St. John's Church in Washington, D.C. This stamp is said to picture the tale of three visitors from the East who came bearing gifts for Jesus. For those unaware, the biblical wise men, or three kings of the New Testament Bible, were more formally referred to as Magi and can be found in chapter 2 of the book of Matthew. The stamp art depicts silhouettes of the three Magi atop camels on a small hill. A large star representing the star of Bethlehem appears in the upper left in the evening sky. The word Christmas is inscribed in large gold lettering at the lower left, and the margin surrounding the design is also printed in gold. USPS Art Director Greg Breeding designed the Christmas Magi stamp using an illustration by Nancy Stahl. Stahl also created the Holy Family Special Forever stamp listed as Scott number 4711 and 4813. These stamps were initially issued as double-sided panes of 20 in 2012 and as a single-sided pane of 20 in 2013. The Banknote Corporation of America printed an initial quantity of 200 million new Christmas Magi stamps in double-sided panes of 20. Press sheets, both with and without die cuts, were produced in a quantity of 1,000 of each type. So
what's a Magi?
Yeah.
Well, I think she already explained it. It's just how they refer to the wise men.
Okay.
Well, what were they traditionally, historically?
I prefer the Magi is actually the plural of magicians, which is more in line with what the biblical time period
Well, actually, the word magician and the word magi, they came from the same root. It's from Zoroastrianism from Persia. I don't know quite the link between the two, but it's...
So it's like old guys with lots of money.
Zoroastrianism, and again, they come from the East. They're from the Eastern religions, and the predominant one at the time was the Zoroastrian firewalker sun worshippers. And that's kind of interesting, but they were called magi. They were magicians.
They weren't magicians. The word magician came out of the word magi.
Yeah.
But
they were miracle workers.
There also weren't three wise men. A lot of people think that because of tradition. But no, the number was never mentioned in any of the Gospels.
Really? Oh, they assume three because they do state three gifts.
Because of
gold,
the three gifts, they assume.
Yeah. Oh, what could have been an army then? Cool.
Nobody knows.
And those gifts are pretty pricey, so I could see people going halvesies or something on some frankincense.
Oh, yeah, I know. Dude, could you spot me 20? Yeah. You can have three more camels when we get back.
They're pretty intense gifts.
Here, quick, let me write my name on the tag.
I went to the Middle East as a vacation and came back with a bag full of frankincense. And I thought that was kind of cool because now if the next time somebody is born, I can give them frankincense.
Is that the one that's like stinky tree sap, or what is that? That's crystallized into rocks?
I think both frankincense and myrrh are crystallized tree sap, but
different trees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting the first time I was over in the Middle East that I had to go find out what frankincense and myrrh were. And it was really interesting because you could actually still buy that over there in the spice market.
What is it used for?
It's
perfume.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think frankincense can also be used in a drink.
Yeah, but they don't bathe a whole lot over there because there's a little water shortage going on thing.
Maybe a little bit.
It's a desert.
So they do make a lot of perfume, and they do make it kind of strong.
Well, you can't smoke it.
Well, you can, but...
Oh, my gosh. Oh. Did we really just go there?
Sorry. They have a bunch of smoking traditions around...
No, they throw them in braziers that you light them on fire and it burns because, again, it's tree sap, so it's got a pitch element to it. And it burns and lets off a nice smell.
Like an incense.
Yeah,
it is
incense.
If you've ever seen the big censers that are used in a Catholic church by priests... That's one of the common ingredients of one of those two scents, is either frankincense or myrrh, and they especially use it around Christmas for obvious reasons.
But it's interesting that they don't mention three wise men, they just say wise men, or what do they say?
In the scripture, just that the... Yeah, you know, I'm not sure exactly, either wise men or...
Just so people know, Brian is sort of a Bible expert sort.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so I do take what he says as, so to speak, gospel.
I wish I would have known today's podcast. I would have brushed up.
Yeah.
There's got to be a rim shot thing on that sound effects box somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure there was, but I totally missed the opportunity there.
Oops.
So
anyway,
wise women wasn't a thing back then at all.
Nope, you're out of it.
Ah.
Sorry.
Well, the term three wise men, that was a term I think it was coined in the Middle Ages. So, of course, they're not going to talk about women in a positive way. It's the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, but someone had to birth Jesus. Come on.
Well, they only turned her into a saint.
More than the saint, she's the Blessed Virgin Mother.
That's right up there at the
Norse
same level.
In Norse mythology... The Virgin Mary was more important than Jesus when they were converting over from Norse mythology to Christianity. The Mary was more on the hierarchy than Jesus was. I mean, that's a historical fact.
I've heard that.
Same when they merged the Latin American religions with Catholicism. The Virgin Mary became the one of the top deities and. To match the mythology.
To interrupt real quick, we're discussing religion, and I heard that you're not supposed to discuss religion, politics, or sex.
We should absolutely edit this way down. Yes.
Okay.
But you guys get me going.
Welcome to Religion Talk here today.
No bother. Well, we're stating facts, not opinions. So
how's the weather? Yeah, let's talk about weather.
Whether what?
Okay.
Whether or not we're going to discuss stamps.
So let's talk about stamp collecting in history. Jeff's going to introduce this topic. It's a mouthful.
Okay, this week's stamp collecting in history is not about old history, but rather something historic that just took place. On November 12, the Philae, I think that's how you say it, the Philae lander touched down on Comet 67P, Churyumov-Gerasimenko. Great Britain's Royal Mail honored the historic moment of the European Space Agency landing a spacecraft on a comet just 2 days after it occurred. To celebrate the event, on November 14, the United Kingdom began using a commemorative postmark that reads, "Celebrating the first ever landing on a comet. Congratulations to the European Space Agency." The Philae probe is part of the European Space Agency's Rosetta mission. Named for the famed Rosetta Stone, the mission's objective is to help understand the origin and evolution of the solar system, according to the space agency. The agency also reported that the mission was launched March 2, 2004 and traveled 6.4 billion kilometers through the solar system before reaching the comet in August. The European Space Agency's Director General Jean-Jacques Dordain said, "Our ambitious Rosetta mission has secured a place in the history books. Not only is it the first to rendezvous with and orbit a comet, but it is now also the first to deliver a lander to a comet's surface." Andrew Hammond from Royal Mail said, "We're thrilled to be marking the European Space Agency's fantastic achievement with one of our special postmarks. The Rosetta mission has captured the public's imagination and excitement about space exploration, and we're pleased to be recognizing this historic moment in this unique way. Our postmark is set to take off and will appear on mail delivered by our postmen and women across the UK."
And thank you, Lynn, for that, those quotes in that article. So
thank
how
you,
crazy
Cash, for that obnoxious sound effect.
That just took all the seriousness right out of the room.
So that'd be a good thing to find.
Yeah, it'd be kind of a cool modern cancel to get a hold of.
Well, and it's appearing on all the normal mail. I guess you could rush out real quick and, well.
Have one of your European friends mail you something, I guess.
Buy something on eBay.
Yeah, exactly, because, what, it's 3 days ago on this podcast?
Something like that.
Yeah, so by the time you hear this, you have no chance of getting the postmark, so find them on eBay, yeah.
Oh, come on, you guys. It's really cool. No one say. I'm sure they did this on an episode of Star Trek already.
Didn't Bruce Willis already do that anyway?
I heard that Jeff's actually fluent in Klingon.
Kapla!
So with the updates today, we're going to talk a little bit more about citrus oil in depth. Cash wanted to cover this.
I have two things today. First one is last podcast I mentioned that Chester Arthur was never married. He's my favorite president. He was married. His wife died before he went into office. I just wanted to say that so everybody doesn't email us saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. You've got your history wrong. The second thing, though, is that we have found a really good way of removing the U.S. forever self-stick stamps. It also goes with the $2 Jenny stamp, the priority stamps, anything which is self-stick. We found there is an aerosol spray called Pure Citrus, and they sell it on Amazon. They also sell it out of Home Depot.
And Walmart.
And Walmart. And, well, there's quite a few places, but it's called Pure Citrus. There is another one which has the name citrus in it. You want to look for Pure Citrus Orange Air Freshener. And if you spray the stamp, it turns the gum into a consistency of like wet rubber cement so that you can just slide it off the envelope.
I don't know. I think I'd call that more like jelly.
Yeah, jelly.
Tacky gel.
It liquefies it where it was never liquefied. You know, when you pull it off a self-stick, it's still sticking there. So it does liquefy gel it somehow. You can remove it from the cover and then just scrape the gum off the back. Or Scott rubs the gum off the back on a napkin. But in either case, these very difficult to remove forever stamps, very easy to remove if you look for Pure Citrus Orange Air Freshener. And that's my tip for updates.
So I've seen that people have used like WD-40 and other stuff. So how does this different?
Well, I think anything you use is going to leave a residue in the stamp. Hopefully this is not something that is going to affect the stamp and the stamp's integrity. Although as you have to let the stamp, quote unquote, dry after you do the removal because the air freshener will evaporate.
I never heard of WD-40 being used.
Yeah, I saw a YouTube video where some guy took a WD-40 pen and used it on the back of a paper.
Well, one really
not on
big,
the stamp itself, and then peel it off.
One really big difference between the two is the orange air freshener. It smells better than WD-40.
And that is true.
Your stamps will smell wonderful.
Actually, it's pretty cool because when it dries, your stamps do not smell like orange. And we are familiar with this with people who clean with bleach. You will smell the stamp, and you get a definite bleach smell when they come in.
I would still use that orange oil in a pretty well-ventilated area because
that
stuff is freaking potent.
It can be strong if you use a lot of it.
Okay, let's talk about stamp stories. This time I'm going to challenge our listeners with a holiday challenge. So has anyone here heard of a pen pal or had one before?
I did when I was 10, living in California, I think I met on the beach. We were pen pals, and he lived in Arizona or New Mexico or something like that.
I tried writing my favorite author, and it's only a pen pal with the right back. So I guess that was a fail on my part.
If they write back, they have to write back more than once.
Oh, there we go.
No, who was your favorite author? Just curious.
Star Trek author.
I was thinking, I don't remember them ever writing a Hello Kitty book.
Yeah. They exist. Get out of my head. We have them.
We have all of them.
She actually wrote her thesis paper for her degree on Hello Kitty and used multiple Hello Kitty business books as her reference material.
Yeah, wow. It's serious.
And she got a good grade, too.
Yeah, I had to present it in my
teacher. Please don't tell me what college that was.
Oh, it was a real college.
I don't doubt it. I just don't want to know.
My teacher is rolling her eyes the whole time presentation, but I got an A.
She couldn't refute the accuracy. The subject matter, on the other hand.
Anyway. Okay, so we've all had or heard of pen pals. So my challenge to you is to find a pen pal. And there are websites dedicated to linking people up, kind of like Match.com, but for pen pals. The first one is ipfworld.com. That one's a paid site because they actually have you answer a couple of questions about yourself and try to match people up with their common interests. A free one is penpalworld.com. Penpalsnow.com, pen-pal.com, letternet.de.
That's if you want a pen pal from Denmark.
Oh, yeah.
No, DE is Germany.
Germany, yeah. Germany.
Oh, is it Germany?
Yeah.
Deutsches.
There we go. SASSOCIATIONS.net.
S-Associations.
Yeah. And
Martin Damas tripod.com, which is clearly a Dutch.
There's two A's in everything.
Yeah.
Martin Dams, but just two A's everywhere.
So those are dedicated to helping pen pals meet each other. We want to hear about your experience writing letters across the world or it's just locally. And you can hit us up on our Twitter feed, which is StampShowHT, or Facebook, StampShow Here Today, and tell us about your experience. So that's my challenge. And it's good to send holiday cheer. You know, greeting cards, postcards.
The one thing that I wanted to... I've never had a pen pal, but I have done chain letters before. Does that count?
Did you send the $20?
No, it was No. No way. No, but you send 10 letters out, and then supposedly in the end you get a million letters back, and I don't remember ever getting any letters, so I guess the chains always broke after I wrote.
Well, this is kind of there's a couple of sites dedicated to emailing. Instead of emailing, you send a letter. They'll actually, someone will handwrite your email and send it for you.
Yeah.
So let's skip a step and just direct to sender. And you know, it's neat.
In case you forgot how to write.
Yeah. What?
Well, so I send them an email.
Yeah.
You send and then someone, some real person somewhere prints this out
no,
and writes it out by hand.
Yep.
I don't know to call, if that's smart or lazy or see all of the above. What? This is confusing. Bass backwards, definitely.
You're usually supposed to get handwritten stuff and convert it into digital, not vice versa.
Well, we were talking about education last week at some point in the office, and Tom has a little one that just started kindergarten, and I was shocked to find out they removed cursive from the teaching curriculum. That's no longer part of it.
Well, I personally block print everything, and I learned when I was in school not cursive. And so it doesn't kind of surprise me. However, I do look all the time at old letters because, you know, I'm into postal history. It is so difficult to read cursive, especially if it's 150 years old.
It's definitely an art.
Yeah.
Well, a dying one, apparently.
So, you know, in the good old days when you first started your email account, you got your first email. It's so exciting, you know.
You've got mail.
Exactly. Now, when you get a letter in the mailbox, it's more exciting than when you get an email, I think.
Oh,
it's always exciting when it's not a bill. So
exactly. I haven't gotten a handwritten letter in I don't know how long. Wow, that's a good point.
No, I like the junk mail where they fake handwrite the outside of the envelope.
They laser print handwriting onto
it? Yeah, they laser print everything written in cursive.
By a computer?
By a computer, yeah, exactly.
That's why they need to teach cursive in school still, so kids can read that when they get older.
Well, I've seen there are printers that actually, they will replicate a signature with a pen. It's not a laser printer. It's an actual stylus.
These are for the president.
Oh, well, that's right.
It's called an auto pen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's something that when you have an item that's signed by a famous person, whether it's a politician or a movie star or a sports star, they send it in and they know what the characteristics of auto pen looks like, and they know who uses them and who doesn't or who didn't. And Richard Nixon was very famous for using an auto pen. He had 3 or 4 different auto pen signatures. He had secretaries that signed for him. And so to get a genuine Richard Nixon signature is actually kind of unusual. So it's all part of the expertizing process when you do signatures.
I heard the same thing was with Abraham Lincoln's signatures, that his secretaries signed his name.
Majority.
Yes. And so you'll get something that has Abraham Lincoln's signature on it, and they check it out, and they go, yeah, that is Abraham Lincoln's third assistant's signature for Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
So I guarantee that any pen pal that I choose for this project, I will write my own name.
Ah. In cursive.
That's like...
Yes.
You could bring that right back into the postal stuff. Talk about the provisional stamp that the... I can't remember which one it is that the postmaster signed.
Oh.
And he had all of the ACM, RCM, and all those on it because he had his brother-in-law and everybody else signing. He decided, this takes too much time for me.
Okay, our expert topic this week is topical stamp collecting, which is kind of controversial because there are definite camps on go topical or why waste your time with topical. So,
well, I'm of the opinion that the only bad way to collect stamps is not to collect stamps. So as long as you're collecting, you're doing it right.
So what is topical stamp collecting? What's the definition of that?
Well, I cheated. I actually looked it up. And it's thematic storylines based on images or subjects. And then by definition, they said not by country. So you could have the subject be United States stamps. But by definition, they say you can't have a country as the theme. So a topical stamp, otherwise topical, we would all be topical stamp collectors. Because if you collect U.S. stamps, your topic would be U.S. stamps. So I printed off a list, which is sitting on the printer because I am unprepared. And Topical Stamp Society listed several topics and how many stamps were in each topic. Huh. And they had, and again, I'm just, it's sitting on the printer, but I believe there was welders on stamps. And there are 32 stamps with welders on it. And you could get a list and find each one. So if you wanted to do a topical stamp collection on welders, there you could get it. And they have research groups that make sure that the topics are updated. So if somebody came out with a Zamboni stamp, and in the micro print there was a little guy welding something on the side of the Zamboni, they would add that into the welding topic, and it would be up to 33 stamps.
I'm curious, how many for people who want to collect chickens on stamps?
Oh, that's a very popular topic and getting more popular by the minute.
I heard there might be a pending APS study group possibly forming.
Oh, I would. He is bringing up, I would love to start Scott's number, 968. A Scott number 968 research group. And I need 20 people who want to basically hang around, eat pizza, and drink beer. And talk about the chicken stamp while we watch the Super Bowl.
Do I have to provide the pizza or the beer?
I don't know. It depends on whether we charge dues or not.
This got political really fast.
Oh, yeah. The politics of chickens.
That's great. Well, I know, for instance, Jessica collects topically a couple of things. One of her favorites is American Indians on stamps. And it's true. If there's a little tiny speck that you look under a loop, and you go, well, one of the Columbus stamps has this. The Colombian U.S. issues has this. Oh, he went and got his sheet.
Oh.
So how many chicken stamps are there now that you have the list?
Now I am more prepared. I printed off the technology side, and it has architecture, exploration, industry, and medicine.
What? They have chickens in technology?
Awesome. I would guess that would industry. Industry, I'm sure.
Actually, it's probably under agriculture.
Farm equipment and farming, 601 stamps.
Wow.
Fertilizer plants, 32 stamps. Iron industry, 54 stamps. Mining and miners, 606 stamps. And on and on and on. Oh, welders, I misquoted, it's 38.
So is that worldwide or just U.S.?
This is worldwide.
So I was going to bring up some of Jessica's topical collecting. She collects Indians, specifically American Indians. So does that fit by the guidelines you're stating? Does that fit as a topical collection? Because American Indians traditionally are on U.S. stamps.
No, but if she collected Pocahontas, there would be a whopping 8 stamps in
there
her collection.
Is. Here under exploration, Pocahontas, 8.
Not all of them.
They're all Disney. I have all
There's
of them.
One where she's dressed up like a guy.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
a blue
I have
one.
That too.
Yeah.
So there are 7 Disney stamps.
But your thing of little dudes being tacked onto the sides of Zambonis, exactly. If there's a stamp that exists and you look at it under a loop and there's this little tiny dude in the corner with a feather coming out of his head, well, that's an Indian stamp. So now mm-hmm. that's got to count.
That's it.
Well, the way I would collect is it has to be the subject of the stamp. Not just part of the design. So, like, if I were going to collect trees on stamps, I wouldn't want something that showed, you know, Maryland statehood and just happened to have trees in it. I'd want something that was actually topically featuring a tree.
Like the Redwoods or something
yeah.
like that.
Like the 717 Arbor Day? Is that
yeah, right? That would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some here like castles on stamps, 3,384 stamps.
Ooh, is there one on there for...
trains?
Anything, well, I do trains. Anything that has to do with military or weaponry, because I bought a banker's box.
I only printed one page.
Oh.
I'm sure there is. Oh, as a matter of fact, I know there was one topic, swords and knives.
Huh.
And it had many hundreds in it.
Well, I got an album in a banker's box that I bought, and I started going through it. The first 2 pages, I didn't realize what it was, and going, okay, this is a weird mix of stuff, because it wasn't done by year or anything, solely by topic. And I realized by page 3, okay, this is any stamp worldwide that depicts any sort of weaponry or military or tools of war, anything that has anything remotely to do with weaponry or fighting or the military. And now I'm kind of in a weird place because somebody spent a lot of work on this. A lot. It's hundreds and hundreds of stamps. What am I going to do with it? Should I just throw it up on eBay as a topical collection and hope somebody buys it or what?
You can do that. That works.
Or you could start collecting it yourself.
That works too.
See how many I'm missing.
One of the interesting things about topical collecting, though, is if the stamp has a topic that isn't like Queen Victoria, you know, where you want every stamp with Queen Victoria's head or something, most of these topics, they're not going to occur on stamps until the late 1800s or early 1900s. So you're kind of out of the really expensive period of collecting.
I want an automobile on a stamp from pre-1850.
Yeah, there you go. There. I think there was
one. Or better yet, pre-1840.
Nuclear submarines from the 1800s.
The early submarines, I think, were just wishful thinking.
But yeah, you know, there's 32 stamps from fertilizer plants.
How long can you hold your breath?
I guarantee you those fertilizer plants are not from the 1800s, because in 1800s they were putting other things on stamps.
So I couldn't find any sheets made specifically for topical collectors.
What do you mean sheets?
Pages.
Oh, yeah, there are pages. I think the APS does some. They have some sample pages and some topical things like that that they give away. That they've had designed.
They also have a... who is the person who does the advertising for the make your own pages? There's a computer program for making your own pages.
Well, there's a bunch of them.
Oh, okay. Well, one of them specifically advertises the fact that they are for topicals, which I guess doesn't matter because you could...
Well, I mean, you can use Excel or Word or... you can use a lot of different programs to make your own pages. It's just... what works best. And
yeah, but these people advertise, which means that they're better.
Oh, I see.
You can't say it on the internet if it isn't true. So.
Oh, boy. You're one of those.
Yeah.
I've seen that people kind of improvise a lot.
Some that of the is
collections
true.
I've seen are that is very true.
I bought a dealer stock, and in it I found an entire collection of trees on stamps. And it filled a whole notebook.
Well, I collected...
but they were hand-drawn pages. They were actually exhibit pages that somebody had hand-drawn and hand-lettered everything.
That's what mine is like, the weapons one that I have. It's all hand-done like that.
I mean, I looked at it, and I really couldn't find any stamp that was worth more than a buck or a buck and a half. But it was a whole book filled with exhibit pages for trees on stamps.
That's an ironic collection then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Trees on stamps on trees?
Yes. Stamps are made from trees, except for the ones that are made from plastic.
Oh, yeah.
Or embroidered or whatever.
Which, by the way, I soaked off using the orange spray today. One of the new Garland Overseas Forever stamps, the Global Forever stamp. And I soaked it off, and it's always tough to, you know, scrape the glue off the back. And all of a sudden I look, and it's plastic. It's a vinyl stamp. It's like, oh, cool, this is easy. Cleaned up real quick, and now I've got another plastic stamp.
Well, Jessica had a really weird list of stamps last week for something that I was going through. There's a whole handful of modern stuff that I got to get. There's one that actually, I don't know how this works. Maybe one of you guys have heard of it, but apparently it displays a couple of very short video clips sporting sequences. I'm not kidding. It's up. It's one of the bookmarked things on one of the computers out there. So there's a stamp that's like apparently contains film video. Cells. Not film cells. It's supposed to be a moving picture.
Huh.
So I want that one. Then there we were talking about
not like a flip book.
They're called They're called lenticular. It's a lenticular design.
Oh, I know exactly what lenticular is.
As you tilt it, the light hits.
Oh,
hits okay. It different ways, and it looks like it's moving.
So it's like a 3D stamp.
Yeah,
but I've seen those before. Yeah,
but it's not 3D. It looks like the picture is actually moving.
Right.
one of the heavy South American countries, heavy into soccer, printed up a series of stamps on the same vinyl material that soccer balls are made out of. A European country printed a stamp that has Swarovski crystals embedded in the stamp. That's got to be kind of cool. There's stamps made out of chocolate.
Well, I collect, and they're very, very hard to find, so I only have very few of them. But the 25-cent flag stamp, it's a long flag stamp, but it was...
Yes, it's a plastic stamp.
I forget what letter it was, whether it was an F stamp. And they sold it out of First Interstate Bank ATM machines. And I collect that stamp on First Interstate Bank envelopes. And so, you know, just something weird because that stamp came out of that machine, went on that envelope. And it's, you know, just something, it's a topical, but I don't know what topic it fits into.
Banking?
Banking in plastic.
Jeff, I'm going to question chocolate on... chocolate stamps.
It
stamps
exists.
That are made out of chocolate.
Great I know that Britain.
Best yep. marketing there are stamps gimmick
that
ever.
There are stamps that smell like chocolate, but I have never heard of any that are actual
well,
chocolate.
Well, okay, let's say these claim to contain chocolate. How about that?
Oh, okay.
So that would be different, I guess, than just a stamp printed on top of, say, a Hershey square. But they contain chocolate.
So what do you guys think the pros and cons of being a topical collector are?
Well, one of the obvious pros is it's not going to take a lot of money.
Well, if you choose the right topic.
if you choose the right, yeah, right.
Mostly. I mean, you can choose to collect grilled stamps, and then you would have to collect the U.S. grilled stamps, and that could get expensive. But if you wanted to collect Hello Kitty stamps, on the other hand...
Hey, that
or stamps with barbecue
too.
Grills on them.
Those are expensive stamps. Very expensive. I wish they were cheaper.
Well, I think that's true with a lot of modern stamps. The print quantities are coming down, and so that's popular topics are going to the prices are going to rise on them. I mean, look at Disney stamps.
Yeah.
They didn't have really low print quantities, and most of them were printed for collectors, so they're not used, but it's still a super popular topic.
Well, I collect global warming, and other than the United Nations, they were all relatively cheap. The United Nations put out 3 prestige booklets, and each booklet was like $18. Everybody else just put out a normal stamp.
Ooh, $18. There's an expensive stamp.
Yeah, but it's the most expensive thing there.
Yeah, it's true. The weapons collection that I have, there's nothing in there more than like $1.50.
Yeah.
It's not the most expensive thing to do.
It's the thrill of the hunt. It's the thrill of condition. It's the thrill of completion. And it doesn't take a lot of money. And if you can pick something that you're interested in, like when we were at the Sescal, they had the... What was it? It wasn't ships on stamps. I believe it was square rig sailors on stamps.
Well, they do have an exhibiting class for topicals.
Yeah,
now.
But it wasn't just ships. It was the old ships with square rig sailors.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, I believe that guy actually got a gold. He was from Scandinavia somewhere. He came out just to show off that exhibit and collect his medal. It was.
And
very interesting exhibit.
It had 2 giclées.
Oh, bother.
It did.
So what do you think some of the cons are?
There's no con to stamp collecting other than it makes you
nerd. You collect cons on stamps.
I guess Carl said that he didn't take people that collected topical very seriously.
Yeah.
Well,
I know that story. That's a
I don't
good story,
take Carl
actually.
Seriously.
Oh, you better edit that out.
Last time we talked to Carl, he was telling us this excellent story that does absolutely fit right in, and I'll tell the truncated version of it. He went to do some exhibits, totally looked down on topical collectors. Absolutely, 100%. That's, you know, little kid stuff. Nobody does topical that's serious. until he got to what's the international level of stamp competition of exhibits?
The FIP level?
FIP. He got to FIP, and he had to eat a gigantic slice of humble pie when he met the woman who had won the previous year, who had gotten international gold with the topical collection.
Martin Luther King.
So yeah, Martin Luther King on stamps. So it's a modern and it's topical and it got FIP gold. So he said he kind of had to rethink and give a little more respect to topical collectors after that happened.
Isn't that terrible where not only is it a nerd collecting interest, but the nerds are turning against the other nerds?
Well, the nerds are bullying another.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Terrible. It's like, I'm not nerdy enough.
I'm a better nerd than you are.
Exactly.
I have more pocket protectors.
Well, I have seen some very, very good exhibits on topical themes. I was thinking about what I collect, which is 1851 to 1859. And realistically, it's a postal history exhibit, but it's a thematic postal history exhibit. It's a topical exhibit. I mean, when I read the definition here, mine is a topical exhibit because I don't collect stamp. I don't go to collect every stamp from 1851 to 1859. I collect the topics of the stamps from 1851 to 1859.
So if it can't be a country, does technically something like Confederate States count as a topic?
No, it was a country.
Yeah,
exactly.
For like a minute.
Yeah.
Well, but then the reverse of that depends on how specific you get. Like the guy at Seskal that had the exhibit of Civil War era marriage certificate documents
right.
with stamps on them. So that's a lot. Most of it, there was some Union side. There was a lot of Confederate. So that's a way to go Confederate, but also get topical at the same time.
Well, here's another one in this list I have. There's Vikings. Well, you could further say, I am only going to collect Viking stamps from Viking countries. I'm only going to collect Norway, Sweden, and Denmark.
And Russia?
Well, no, they moved through Russia. They weren't actually...
The largest Viking settlement ever discovered was south of Moscow.
Yes, and whose settlement was that?
It was a Viking settlement.
What country? Sweden.
No, it's in Sweden, Russia right now.
It was a trade post for the Swedish Vikings. And you are telling this to the person who wrote their thesis on Viking trade between the North area and the Byzantine Empire.
Wait, hold on. What was the question? You said countries that had Vikings.
Viking countries. The countries that the Vikings were in,
well, they were in Russia then.
They were in Russia.
The
just
countries
like,
they were from.
Just like the United States is in Iraq right now, or Iran, or whatever. No,
name
Iraq.
One state in Iraq.
One state. I can't name a state in Iraq.
But then the United States is not in Iraq.
Huh?
I'm so confused.
I've lost it.
I think the United States is in Mexico, though. I think... We wrote Mexicanized a letter saying we own most of it now.
I don't know. I was going to make a joke about Canada being part of the United States, too. But, but I don't want to make any Canadians feel bad.
But through this conversation, I have discovered I have to find Kaj's Christmas gift now, which is going to be a chicken with a horned helmet gicle.
Secret awesome. Santa.
Well, that Viking chicken gicle.
Well, what I already told
eBay.
You. One of the things I want to find is the chicken stamp on uncached covers. So then I can run it through the printer and put a cachet on it myself for Foghorn Leghorn and Super Chicken and whatever Super chickens chicken. I can think of that were in the comics.
Chicken Little.
Chicken.
There's the angry chicken in Family Guy.
Oh, yes. Yes, that I need. Peter and the angry chicken fighting on a chicken cover.
You want one?
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Which? What?
Cow and Chicken?
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Old What's school. That from?
Nickelodeon, isn't it?
A Cartoon Network.
Oh, Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you grew up with cable.
I think you just put bacon and eggs on there.
Yeah, the
KFC.
There you go.
Okay, that concludes our topic. How do you want to say that?
Our discussion.
Oh.
Yeah, but she's trying to make a play on the words.
Oh.
It's a very punny topic.
Yeah. Oh.
It's a call for help.
That concludes our discussion on topical stamp collecting. You can email us at stampshirehereday@gmail.com with your questions and comments, and keep the discussion going on Twitter and Facebook. On that note, as always, keep collecting.
I'm Brian Metz with OCStampStore.com with your stamp tip of the week. When you're looking at your 1 cent 1851 through 57 issue and you've eliminated type 5, look at the top and the bottom of the stamp. If you look above the top center line above POS of postage or the bottom center line below E space CE of 1 cent, check for a darker or broken recut line. If you see one, then that is the type 4. Type 4s come from plate 1 late, and those were the stamps that were used on plate 1 but became worn at the top and the bottom of the stamps. For more U.S. stamp tips, sign up for my newsletter, OCStampStore.com.
Hi, this is Chris Harmer of Harmer Show Auctions, and I'm at Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.